28 days before the Battle of Fal. The Fal system. They took our fear, but not our doubts. Am I right? Have I misjudged? What will happen? The questions hammered on me, and I bore them in silence. That is the necessity of command, that you hold doubt within. You cannot look to others for assurance, because you are their surety. You cannot share your doubts, lest they spread like a withering disease through muscle. You are alone. Sometimes I wonder if the Primarchs feel this, if decisions eat at their thoughts, as they do mine. I had been drilling with my company for hours. Normally I find calm in the repetition of such practice, but the questions repeated in my mind. What if the storms did not abate? Should I change my plan? What would Sigismund have done? The training chamber ran along the flank of the tribune for half a kilometre. Blast doors closed tank-wide holes in one wall, shutting out the void beyond. The floor was a tangle of barricades and fire-scorched debris. Weapon servitors hung from the ceiling, sliding along gantries to rain fire from the different angles required by the training scenario. As I glanced up, I saw that the barrels of the servitors' cannons were glowing red. The guns increased their rate of fire. Sparks danced across the rim of my boarding shield. Lines of tracer fire scored the air above my head. My shield arm was vibrating with the impact of hard rounds. A line of tracer hit the crown of my helm, and I felt muscles tear in my neck. To either side of me, two of my first squad stood with their shields braced across the left of their body, their legs set. Each shield was a thick plate of plasteel, two-thirds our height. The snouts of bolters jutted from the vertical slot cut into the right-hand side of each shield. Stood shoulder to shoulder, we created a wall of metal. In battles fought in the guts of starships, this is what keeps you alive and allows you to win. Fighting this way is blunt and ugly. It is killing with discipline and workmanlike routine. It is perhaps the method of war I come closest to enjoying. "Advance with fire," I roared. Our targets were servo-rigged automata that moved to preset patterns to mimic the response of a determined enemy. Only when we had closed the distance would real opponents replace machines and servitors. We began to step forwards, and every step was a volley of bolter fire, repeated with lethal rhythm. Questions rang in my head in time with our tread. Was Tyre right? Should we try and break through the storms? After the sensory and psychic onslaught, we had come to full alert and waited for an enemy to show their face. They had not come, and the weeks had passed, and the drumbeat of questions grew in my head. "Enemy, 10 meters front, closing fast," shouted Raun from my right. I could not see the enemy without looking over my shield, but I did not need to. Raun had seen, and I trusted his judgment. Was the Fal system really a trap? The populations of its planets were missing, and we had seemed to come under a form of psychic attack, but we had not found the cause of the onslaught. There could be other factors at work. Our being here could simply be coincidence. "Open ranks!" called Raun. Our shield wall opened, peeling back just before the enemy hit. 5 Imperial fists in a tight wedge, hammers and chainswords ready. Skill at war is a blade edge made sharp only by harsh practice, and so I had picked the best of the company as our close-quarter opponents. They came at us as I intended, like they wanted to kill us. The 5 came through the gap in our shield wall and spilled into the space behind. "Close!" shouted Raun. Our ranks closed, enveloping the mock enemies within in a tight ring of shields. Can I do this? A fifth of a legion on full alert, drilling for an attack that I believed was coming? What if I am wrong? A hammer blow hit my shield with a sound like a gong. An instant later, one of the five enemy warriors had rammed his shoulder into the point where mine and Round's shields touched. It was Setor, sergeant of the 6th Squad, an old warrior seasoned by the conquest of worlds. He was also lethally fast. In the instant that a gap opened between our shields, he had stepped forwards, forcing it wider and bringing his hammer down on my head. My vision swam. I blinked, and in that second, Setor was through our shield wall. He kicked Round's legs out from under him, and suddenly there was a wide hole in the circle of our shields. Above us, the gun servitors rose on their hoists, and bullets began to fall on our heads like rain. I raised my shield high, covering my head. Setor's hammerhead hit me in the gut. I staggered, and a second blow crashed into my faceplate. The eye lenses of my helm shattered, red fragments spilling down my front like drops of blood. I was dead, or would have been, in a true fight. End, I called over the vox. A second later, the gunfire slackened as the servitors hanging from the weapon gantries cycled their slug cannons to silence. I pulled my helmet off. Pieces of red glass ringed the eye sockets like shattered teeth. Around me, my company lowered their weapons. Sulphurous weapon smoke fogged the air. Countless chips and gouges had stripped everyone's armour back to the dull metal beneath. Flattened slugs smeared the fronts of our boarding shields.
"There was an opening, Fleet Master," said Setor, bowing his head as he spoke. "A momentary gap in your guard. I used it to break the shield wall."
I nodded. It is the duty of all Imperial Fists to recognize weakness. Setor was right. My thoughts and focus had drifted. In a real fight, it could have led to slaughter and failure. "Thank you, brother," I said with a nod. Setor moved away, his hammer hanging loose from his fists. I looked at the battered helm in my hand. Anger buzzed behind my eyes. I had allowed my doubts to make me weak. If I could not find the strength to bear my duty, then I would kill us all.
"There may be no enemy coming for you," whispered a craven voice at the back of my thoughts. "Tyre may be right, and your duty might lie down another path."
I thought of Sigismund, our first captain. This was to have been his duty to bear. But he had returned to Terra with the Primarch. I thought of the steps of mischance that meant that his duty now rested in my hands. Would it have been as heavy in his?
"Not bad,"
Round's voice cut through my thoughts. He had come to stand at my shoulder. Blade cuts and gunfire had pitted and gouged his armour. He pulled his own helmet off and took a deep breath, as if savouring the thick smells of battle training.
"The wall broke," I growled. "For the first time in 4 hours, it still broke. Response and cohesion have increased."
"Another 4 hours," I said. Round held up his helmet as if in surrender, and I saw the hint of a smile on his scarred lump of a face. I have no idea why he smiles.
"The artificers will not thank you."
"Another 4 hours." I hefted my shield, feeling its reassuring weight. Raln raised an eyebrow, but nodded and began to shout orders. The company began to reform. Overhead, the gun gantries repositioned into a different configuration. I did not care if the artificers had to rebuild every suit of armour in the fleet. When an enemy came, we needed to be ready. The opinions of others, whether they agreed or not, were of no matter. Strength requires obedience, not thought. I clamped my eyeless helm over my head. I would be without the information fed to me through the helmet's eye lenses, but I would continue anyway. In war, you cannot rely on anything except your brothers. To do otherwise is weakness. "Begin," I called, and the hammer chime of gunfire filled my ears.
"Fleet Master,"
The helm officer's voice cut through the noise as I was about to give the first order. It was Cartris, a human veteran of 50 years in service to the Imperial Fists, and the man I had trusted with coordinating the sweep of the system's planets, moons, and asteroid belts. He was not the type to be easily shaken, but I could hear the tension in his voice. Was it an attack? Alarms would have rung through the ship. No. It was something else, something important enough to alert me immediately, but not enough to raise a general alarm.
I hear you, Cartris.
We have received a signal from our search units. Cartris paused. I could hear the chatter of signal readouts and vox distortion in the background.
They have found something.
Tyre came with me. Perhaps I wanted him to see it, and so answer his own questions. But perhaps there was another, less worthy motivation. Our steps clanged dully as we approached the dead machine at the centre of the gloom-filled chamber. I glanced at Tyre, but his eyes stayed fixed on the isolated circle of bright light. The chamber had been an ordnance magazine. Its walls were 3 metres thick, and its triple-layered blast doors sealed by stratified layers of cipher codes. The machine sat alone, under a buzzing stasis field, a specimen pinned out for display, and then locked away from sight. Automated gun turrets twitched at our approach, and then cycled to stillness. It was as if we had passed into a shadow world that had formed like a cyst around a secret. We stopped and looked at what the search teams had pulled from the ocean of Fal 2. The machine glistened under the stab lights, water beading its bare metal body, the stasis field tinting the drops to sapphires. It had suffered severe damage, but its form was still clear. A blunt-edged cube of metal, studded with thruster vents and ugly protrusions. Its shell had been cracked open, first by jagged wounds that, to my eyes, looked like impact hits, and then by the smooth cuts of a melter torch. The tech priests had dissected it and left it with its innards exposed. I could see a jumble of cables and clusters of glass blisters like lidless eyes. Dribbles of yellow fluid hung unmoving from severed tubes. Shattered crystals had spilled over the stained floor. At its heart was something grey and soft, like a corpse bloated in lightless water. I could see a spine under pale skin, and above that, a nest of cables haloing a head, its eyes and mouth stapled shut. There were no arms or legs, just stumps. A thick smell of ionized air filled my nose, and my teeth ached in time with the field's hum. I had seen countless servitors created by the Mechanicum, and had waded knee-deep through mutilated bodies, but there was something about the machine and the amputated torso that was utterly repellent. I had examined it before, when the search teams first brought it aboard, but without the crowding tech priests and labour servitors, it felt different. It felt like going to a grave's edge to look down at the remains of a secret atrocity. Tyre let out a carefully controlled breath beside me. "What is it?" he said, his voice echoing in the empty chamber. "We don't know. At least, not with certainty," I said. Tyre was moving around the edge of the stasis dome. "The search units I sent to Fal 2 found it floating in the oceans, but it has clearly been exposed to the void. The adepts tell me that the machine components have several purposes." Tyre gave a small nod, but was silent as I pointed to different portions of the wreckage. "Most of it is made up of high-gain auger arrays and broad-spectrum sensors, effective over a relatively short range. Then there is the human component. Apparently it would have been in a state of hibernation, kept alive with minimal power usage. Their assessment is that it was in orbit around Fal 2, suffered damage and fell to the planet's surface." Tyre was still staring at the grey remains of the human in the machine.
I glanced at it, then away. It made me want to shiver.
Some form of servitor-controlled sensor vehicle? An asteroid survey unit, perhaps?
The adepts think it unlikely. In addition to the sensor equipment, some of the systems seem to be a form of psi amplifier.
Tyre looked up.
This created the psi attack?
This and others like them. There were hundreds of energy signatures detected. There are most likely many more.
We need to find and destroy them. They could trigger again at any moment.
This one fell through the ocean planet's atmosphere as its orbit decayed. Our search teams would never have found it without the flare light of its re-entry.
I looked back at the broken machine and its pitiful occupant.
It sustained damage, but the adepts say that most of its system had already burnt out. Its occupant was already dead.
Tyre shook his head, his face taut with an emotion I could not read.
They were killed once they had been activated, he breathed. There was a note of disbelief and rage in his voice. Objects this size, now dead and without power. We could sift this system for a decade and find nothing. With no population on the planets, there is no way of knowing who put them here or why they attacked us.
You are correct. But it was no attack.
You say that now?
I could see the months of dispute and controlled animosity straining at his will. After the psychic attack, Tyre had not dropped his calls for the fleet to try and break the storms. If anything, his attitude became more unyielding, as had mine. I had hoped that he would have seen the full implication of the recovered machine and that my decisions had been correct. It was a weakness, and like everything built on weakness, it was doomed.
Look at it, brother.
Tyre's eyes flicked back to the machine, skimming over its broken form.
The sensors, the auger and communication sifters, the psychic screams we all felt were not attacks. They were a message.
He looked up at me and I saw that he understood at last.
It was no attack, brother. It was a prelude to one.